Ladies and gentlemen, All About Reality is back to you, coast to coast. Goody, Luke Patrick here, back on the mic finally. How you doing, Goody? It's been a minute.
Yeah, it certainly has been a minute. Reality got real with some family stuff. But I'm super excited to be back on. I think we're both exhausted, but it's going to be very, very therapeutic to talk some reality sports online after, you know, 3 week sample and diving into, you know, all that's going on the platform and, you know, on the fake football field.
Absolutely, man. And we're exhausted, as you say, both reality, but like, it is good to be back here talking to you, knowing that our listeners have been having some questions for us. And we've just all been drinking from this fire hose of information that is the first 3 weeks of the NFL. Some teams that we think are real, some defenses that we think are real, what to look forward to for the rest of the year, and how to like best use that for our RSO squads and teams. So right off the bat, speaking of fire hose information, it looks like with Rappaport and others reporting that Melvin Gordon is finally going to make an appearance for us for the Chargers. Give me your gut feeling on this. Are you happy to have him back on the field? Sad about this? What do you think? First of all, talk to me from the perspective of a Gordon owner. What to make of this, that he might be back on the field as early as week four, right? So,
I mean, I think he'll have one more week after this. So, I mean, first off, if you have Justin Jackson and Austin Ekeler, bang that drum against the Miami Dolphins without hesitation this week. I think both of them will feast. I know Justin Jackson's had some touchdowns called back. I think if any a time where you have the ability to, you know, accrete value on him that you've been kind of banking on, I think this is the week. I know we're more of a long-term focus versus a start-sit. But I do like Justin Jackson this week. If you're a Gordon owner, I think you got to be pretty happy, you know, from the standpoint of, hey, this didn't take that long. He wants to prove his value on the field. He doesn't really seem to be, you know, as much of a malcontent, so he's not sitting out as long. The question you have to worry about is, you know, outside of the cameo appearances that he's had on HBO's Ballers that I've seen, I don't know, you know, you worry about these soft tissue injuries. He's had a little bit of injury history in the past. I think, you know, you can't plan for that, obviously. I mean, if you have Gordon in your lineup and he's back, you bang that drum. I think Ekeler still has a standalone role. I think Jackson kind of falls back to the wayside, you know, after that. But, I mean, I'm excited about Gordon in the near term, you know, for what he can do this season. I think that, you know, the next couple seasons are still up in the air on whether the Chargers are going to, you know, like act on what his perceived value is of himself. And, you know, so he still may end up on another team, and that's where the uncertainty comes up from an RSO perspective.
Makes sense to me. You've never been, and I think wisely so, I think the data backs you up, you've never been a big handcuff guy, and you alluded to Ekeler's standalone value. If I came to you and I was the Gordon owner, and I think there's going to be a lot of guys in this situation where the sky is falling a little bit on the Ekeler owner. They got a great return on their investment, probably more than they ever could have hoped for. If I'm the Gordon owner and I'm coming to you with, say, Wayne Gallman, knowing that he's going to have the volume for the next few weeks, would you give me Ekeler for Gallman, presuming that their strategies matched enough for to make that trade work? Is that something that you'd be interested in doing?
I think the only way I'm doing that is if there's favorable cap perspective to it and they're both on 1 year deals. I still think Ekeler has long-term standalone value. If Gordon's not a Charger next year or other scenarios, I think he still catches balls. I think he has, you know, he has 10 to 15 touches a week probably still. Over time, you know, with Gordon there, and I think that's good enough to play as a flex. And Gallman, I mean, he didn't do much, you know, I mean, it was Danny Dimes, much to Bobby Hoyt's pleasure this week. And I mean, I think Gallman's role, you know, obviously increases, but I did say this on Twitter when someone asked, I do think that there's going to be someone picked up off the street for the Giants in the immediate future too, that may cut into Gallman's pie as well. So I'd lean towards the Ekeler side pretty heavily still.
Very good. And with that end, let's use Eckler to leverage exactly what so many people are chatting us up about on Twitter. We're getting him back channel in the leagues that we're in. The podcast league is off to like a great start. Some really dynamic performances by like new owners. It's been as good as we could hope for. There's this other extreme fantasy league that someone set up that I've been privy to. Really interesting, like startup with 32 teams and 40 person rosters. And the question they asked me is exactly about a player like Eckler. That guy has gotten off to a blazing start. If he's on a one-year deal, and Goody, you and I have spoken a little bit about this offline too, we're about to come up on contract extension time. A player that has been a flash in the pan like Eckler, it almost seems like now you could extract more value from him, because when his contract extension cost comes up, suddenly he's not so palatable, right? Like most people, if he's on a one-year deal, know that he's a fish that's going to go flopping right back into the free agent pool. So don't you think you leverage this moment in time when he's still about to hit the Miami Dolphins? Like, can you envision a future where his value as a trade asset is higher than it is this very week?
No, I cannot. I think he's at peak value going into that Dolphins game. I mean, the Gordon news notwithstanding, is probably a peak value, you know, a week prior. But I agree with you on that in terms of if people are thinking they can get a cheap extension on him, but maybe people won't be thinking that. So, I know that Eckler got extended in one of my leagues last year. I feel like it was like 2 years, $14 million. And that seemed like a decent contract. That seemed like kind of like the Tevin Coleman type contract when Devontae Freeman was around. And so, I don't really know Eckler's contract status in real life, too. Maybe he can bounce to another. Maybe they pay Gordon and he bounces to another team and accretes value. So, but to your point, I think his value may diminish over time unless the contract extension offer starts getting in the realm of that 2 year, $14 million reasonability, basically. Like right now, because of his sample is going to be based solely on his, enormous start, then I think we're looking at problems in that respect, that you'll see an astronomical offer for Eckler potentially, in the first week of extension offer.
Yeah, for sure. A hat tip to our friends at Over the Cap, who we really got to get on because they vibe so nicely with what we're doing here at RSO. But it seems like Eckler's guaranteed contract ends this year. So that's a good call on your part that he's not necessarily tethered to the Chargers organization beyond this year. And that actually speaks to what perhaps has been the most significant question that I've been getting from multiple parties as we gear up to do this again together. Is a player like Eckler, so you're not inclined to flip Eckler for a player like Gallman at this point who can help you this season. But what if I just tossed you a 2020 second, knowing what that class is looking like? Say we're in our 12-team league and I'm tossing you that second. Are you taking the second for Eckler at this point?
That is a good question. I'm certainly thinking about it. I think the question becomes like where that perceived second would be and the rest of my draft pick portfolio looked like.
Fair enough. I think at this point I'm hitting smash accept on that, even unless I, with the condition that like if you are a contender, now is not the time to get stingy with said draft picks, right? Like you can leverage every single week and an Eckler performance this week to like a little bit more point cushion, a little bit more help for you, perhaps a bye week at the end. Like I, of course, think that RSO is best treated like a season-to-season league when you're in contention. And when you fall out of contention, then you have to do everything you can to like knock at the door of those contenders and say, hey, like I can really help you right now. And this is like my big fear, Goody. Have you been in those leagues when people start to realize they're not in contention because they're humble enough to be like, holy crap, I'm not going to be able to dig myself out of this hole. There's other teams that are much better than me. And so they start the fire sale early and end up sucking up all the easily attainable assets because people are getting excited that they have a contender on their hands for the first time. So is week three too early to identify your team as a failure or as a contender in your mind?
I think psychologically it's tough to throw in the towel that early, but I mean, if you've been playing long enough, and to your point, I feel like you've mentioned this to me in the writers league, and like with your team, that your team is just kind of going through the motions. You're not happy with your quarterback play. I mean, you're always somebody who's looking to improve, whether it's long term or short term. So I think that it's not necessarily too early, but like, I mean, you could say, you know, if you're 3 weeks in and you're struggling, and then you basically take the approach like, hey, I'm going into a Thursday night game where I have a bunch of guys, and you guys lay an egg early, you know, in that Packers Eagles game, then hey, maybe you start that process, and you know, and identify like what types of assets you want to build on going forward.
Yeah, very good. And speaking of that, we got to own it a little bit going into week three. We've been doing our best in the offseason to give good advice to those that listen to us. And I made no qualms about the fact that on many of the leagues that are most important to me, I pushed all in on Kirk Cousins because of his contract situation, because I perceived him as having one of the best wide receiver cores in the league. As you know, that I do not like that at this point, if to answer Kirk's question most famously that he asked, do you like that? And I don't. Like what I've seen so far, even in victory, he threw 10 passes. Like if the Vikings continue on the passing rate that they're on now, they will have the lowest percent of passes called since like the millennium has dawned. It's a really significant downtick in this. And so my biggest miss was, and obviously this hurts coming from someone who follows the team closely, was that I was dubious about the Lions' effectiveness to block for Dalvin Cook, but confident in their ability to at least buy enough time for that wide receiver core. And frankly, it's played out quite differently than that. So that's my biggest miss of the offseason. Anything that you're feeling like a little bit remorseful about, are you going to take the L on for our listeners so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, kind of part and parcel with that. I think that I was pretty confident that you know, with Gary Kubiak in, that Dalvin Cook would be, you know, one of the better running backs, assuming that he stayed healthy. Like I said, I didn't love Cousins, but I didn't extrapolate that to Stephon Diggs, basically, and think that, you know, that Kirk Cousins would turn into an $83 million guaranteed game manager. I mean, Stephon Diggs right now, I think, has 12 targets. And I know, like someone says, you know, in the Packers game, he had a touchdown callback, but I think he scored a touchdown right after that play. So I think that he replaced a lost touchdown with a touchdown. And I mean, Thielen's kind of made do with Cousins, but like, I think what you're looking at with Cousins, like right now, unfortunately, from a fantasy perspective, is like basically Russell Wilson without the efficiency and with turnovers. And, you know, so basically like he has the amount of attempts Russell Wilson would have in most games because the Seahawks like to run the ball, just like the Vikings like to run the ball, you know, but with a better defense too. So the game script, it's not going to be often that the game script is going to be such that Cousins, like, whereas in the Redskins and maybe, you know, even last year with the Vikings, where they're behind and he's chucking the ball. So I think that does not bode well for Diggs. I really like Diggs as a player and a route runner and a person. And, I think I missed on, like, how much fantasy value he has across, like, redraft leagues and, you know, particularly RSO, where his price tag is fairly high.
Yeah, good call. And I like that you mentioned the comparable situation, because I feel like that is one place that both on here and in private, I've been pushing people towards Russell Wilson and towards an increase in volume to match his efficiency. And my love for DK and my love for Tyler Lockett in the offseason has frankly been of great benefit to people. I think that the sky's the limit for those guys. I think the arrow is all pointing up in Seattle on that passing game. And I think we can really stand behind in that particular take. To that end, on an even deeper take, I've been impressed with, and I know I netted this guy in a couple leagues on your advice. You kind of stood tall for Chark when other people were off that boat, and so talk a little bit about what your process was there as you were pointing people back to him, because you've alluded to him a couple times on the program too.
Yeah, I mean, Chark was kind of one of the sleeper guys. I thought he had like a late second, early third, type price tag a couple of years ago. For me, it was just Nick Foles, the type of receiver that like Nick Foles has had success with in the past. Like Alshon Jeffery is pretty good with him. He just seems to like win balls. He's got, elusive speed. He's a nice spark athlete. I think, the team traded up for him. I just felt like there wasn't that much competition standing in his way. And, that once he was given the opportunity that he, once he learned the offense and worked with Foles, that I thought he could be a nice little fantasy player. And, so far so good with Minshew. I mean, I've been really impressed with, what Minshew's added to that dynamic, on the Jags. And it's fun to watch. I mean, it begs the question whether Foles, when he's healthy again, whether, I assume based on his contract that he'll be back starting, but I don't know that that will hamper Chark. I mean, I think it's naive to expect a touchdown every week, but he's a guy I think you can kind of, that maybe you were thinking was a bench player that, you can target as a flex in a deeper league or anything else. And he's been putting up consistent fantasy points. So, I mean, one thing I'll go back to with Minshew, like the game against the Texans, it was really fun to watch the end when he came back, and I was kind of disappointed. I'm sure we probably want to talk about Fournette anyway, so that's why I'm making the segue. Like, disappointed that they went with such a non-creative play call, like on the 2-point conversion, just to hand the ball to Fournette up the middle. Just seemed very unimaginative after like Minshew and his ability to scramble was the reason that they got back into that game.
Absolutely. There is some really egregious cases of play calling this year that, and I tend to be of the camp that for a long time in my fantasy life as a player, I chased coordinators and I thought that they mattered a great deal. I still am of the mind that a few coordinators can amplify the talent of the players that are in front of them, but the majority of play callers just are kind of neutral in terms of that. They neither help nor hurt the players, and that it's better to chase the talent of the player themselves. You alluded to Fournette. He's an interesting case for us right now because I think he's one of those rare instances where he is so badly underperformed expectation, but not by virtue of opportunity. So he's getting loaded down with opportunities. He's getting the ball an awful lot. Like, right, he was the only player that got 100% of his team's carries last week. We don't know what the algorithm's like, right? We've never gotten to get into to peel back Kyle's mind and like find out like how he built that and how Steven and Pappy have built it. But we do know that fantasy points scored is part of the algorithm. So owners of Fournette are going to have a decision to make because he's coming up on the end of his rookie contract. So if your league has employed the rookie extension, you're going to be able to like make that offer and lock him in for the 5th year coming up here soon. Or you're going to be able to offer a more straightforward extension to the kid. And that will probably be less pricey than perhaps his expectation is. So now it's go time, right? You and I have to sort out, is Fournette the kind of player that when the algorithm comes back and his agent asks for 4 years, $15 million per year, that's a pretty reasonable price for a running back in these big leagues that a lot of our listeners are playing in. Is that something you're willing to commit to Leonard Fournette?
For me, I think it depends on like, what type of, I mean, you can always park him on your IR if he has some injury concerns and get, amnesty, so to speak, like for half the contract. I'd prefer to take the year by year approach, but realize that there is some potential arbitrage opportunity. So, I mean, my first bit of advice on this is don't be lazy. At this point in the year, it's pretty easy to calculate the top 10 contracts and the contract overview at the running back position, see what that number is. And the average of that, at least for, and this is not like as they exist now, these are players who are still signed through next year. Figure out those 10, do the math, see what that number looks like. At the same time, then if you want to apply some more math on what his extension may look like, then take the franchise, then instead of the top 10, take the top 5. Do a franchise tag calculation on what Fournette may be. Then walk that back, probably by like $5 million for the first year on the franchise tag, and then start adding in the percentages year by year. You can see where that fits with along with your expectations. I mean, I knew I threw a bunch of math just there, but I do agree with you. There are opportunities to arbitrage on Fournette. I also think in the short term that, you know, there's going to be some favorable touchdown regression at some point. I didn't see any of the game last week against the Titans, but seemed like there was driving rain. He had a 69-yard carry, which was most of his rushing yards. He got caught from behind, you know. Oh, well, you know, like as a fantasy player, you take the yardage. You don't question the fact that he got caught from behind, and that was all he did. But like you said, he's getting such a huge share. I think he saw 8 targets last week, and even if he's catching 6 of them for 20 yards, if you're in PPR, that works. So I think all those things point up for him, other than the fact that, you know, he may not be the star that we thought he was.
I tend to agree with you. And I think those factors, I'm going to keep like adding to. First of all, I'm glad that you alluded to the targets too. It's been pretty excellent. He's one of the few running backs in the league that is like over 20% of his team's target share in targets. I don't know that Minshew's presence changes that. It's been consistent with him at the quarterback position. It's one of those situations though, I feel as you and I talk, that all my rationale is buying the situation more than the player. Like if you told me that he was not on the Jaguars next year, or that he was like did something boneheaded and got cut midseason, I would not be shocked. Like if this was week 7 and we no longer have Leonard Fournette in the league to talk about, that makes me a little bit gun shy on Fournette. But it brought to the fore for me when I started to think about what you and I would talk about, I was trying to think that RSO has its own spin on buy low as you build your roster, try to figure out what players that we're going to have extensions on. And so I came up with a little list for you, and you can come after me for any of these guys that I think are good buy low candidates. I'm thinking coming off a really high profile game like we just saw that was not the most exciting to watch, but with Taylor Gabriel like dropping 3 touchdowns, I think I'm going to go chase his buddy, Allen Robinson, who's really looked good on the field in the times that you've been back. He's also probably attached to really expensive contracts in most of our leagues. And as such, you can get him for, like, it'll cost you something on your roster in terms of cap space, but you can probably buy him much more cheaply because of the lack of touchdown, which I view to be kind of random at this point. Like, what do you think? Can you go get Allen Robinson for far less than he's worth on the open market right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's clearly the number one receiver there. I think that, you know, Gabriel had a good matchup, but he's seeing the most consistent volume. I mean, he had a pretty big game against the Eagles in the playoffs last year. And if he happens to be on a cheap contract, because remember, he was, you know, tore an ACL a couple of years ago and some people extended him on that, and me being one of those people, that, you know, if you extended him cheaply, like he still may be a decent RSO contract, and, you know, but you still may be able to buy him fairly low in terms of what assets you have to give up.
Yeah, very good. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think of guys that you can go get that might be difference makers. This one I'm really fascinated to get your insight on, because you and I went back and forth on him all off season. I believe that we both ended up with him on our Scott Fishbowl team, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm talking your Seattle native out there, Rashad Penny. I think he has, like, wild upside both this season and the future with what's happening with Carson and the fumbling. Even though Carson seems to be favored by the coaching staff and trusted and maybe even a better runner overall, Penny hasn't disappointed when been given the opportunity, and he's coming off the soft tissue issues right now. It seems like he's super gettable. Is he worth getting?
I think this week will tell a lot about that. Assuming Penny plays, I think that the rope on Carson is getting shorter, but Carroll is somebody that when he likes someone, he gives them a fair bit of chances, as otherwise, like, our buddy CJ Procise probably wouldn't be on the roster. And I think, you know, Procise's snap share last week was indicative of, you know, the partially game script team playing from behind, needing someone to catch more passes. Second, like, you know, sending a message to Carson about the ball security. So I mean, Penny's still on like a first round rookie deal, and you know, I think somebody who goes a season and a half without seeing real value on that may start getting antsy. So from that standpoint, yes, I think he has a decent amount of value in terms of like what he will produce in the future. I still think that that chapter is unwritten.
Fair enough. And that's what we're trying to do, is read tomorrow's newspaper a little bit. So I'm coming down pretty firmly on the side. The more I think about the kid, and again, this is without a lot of observation of him on the field, like, but the more I just think about the situation, it just almost makes too much sense to me, both as an RSO GM describing the situation that you just did. Like, if you're a Penny owner, a lot of those Penny orders were pulling the cord last year. Now they have to be beyond frustrated, right? He was getting the hype in the offseason and he hasn't delivered. So I think you can go get him there. Another set of like running backs that I want to talk to you about. What about the guy sitting behind Devontae Freeman right now? I like the Falcons offense. I like their schedule coming up. I think the NFC South is just about to be a fountain for points. The division's going to be wide open. Sometimes they're going to be playing from a lead. And I know that Ito Smith just got his bell rung, and I hope the kid is perfectly fine. Like, concussions are no joke. But I haven't seen, like, despite like a fairly good looking run or two this past weekend, Freeman seems cooked a little bit. Is going after Olsen and Smith a real good buy low at this point?
Yeah. I mean, their costs are virtually free. So,
right.
Absolutely. I mean, Freeman has a concussion history and everything else. Now, you know, Smith has one. I mean, I think that they kind of like this Brian Hill guy too, a little bit. So I mean, there's definitely a role. I was listening on the NFL the other day to, you know, Marcus Grant and Fabiano and our buddy Graham Barfield, and they were talking about Freeman. And I think there's still some upside there, you know, in that offense. But he's got to show it fairly soon, I would think.
Yeah, very good. And then the other thing, the last thing that I want to ask you about on my list is, a lot of our listeners play in two quarterback leagues, especially deeper ones that we're talking, this like a 16 teamer, like the podcast league. All these young kids have gotten a shot and frankly performed admirably with them. You've got Minshew, you've got Kyle Allen, you've got Teddy Bridgewater, and you've got Mason Rudolph. Those four guys in a 16 teamer superflex league, all on probably dirt cheap contracts. We need to get real with our listeners about what kind of value they really have in the mind of a Reality Sports Online GM. So, for example, I went and bought Rudolph for like a 2021st. Is that an overpay in your mind? In a league, again, this was a 32-team league, so it's the equivalent of a 16-team superflex. Quarterbacks take on like enormous value. So in a superflex like that, is a 2021st, which I presume to be late, is that worth it in your mind?
And Rudolph's on a multi-year contract?
Indeed. He's locked in for a couple of years at like $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a blank canvas right now to write his book. So, I mean, I think he's looked okay so far. And Roethlisberger clearly with that, he did have elbow surgery. I know he went back and forth. I don't know if it was Tommy John surgery, but he did have it on the 23rd. I think that, I mean, he's up there. He wants to play out his contract. But, you know, if Rudolph plays well enough, Roethlisberger may not get the opportunity to. So I like that for you, especially in a league that deep with, you know, the quarterback's pickings are next to nothing, and I assume he's your QB2. And even if he's not your QB2, like, you know, if you have three quarterbacks in a league like that where, you know, everyone's always in need, then you have a flippable asset. So I could justify trading the first for that.
Very good. And just from your mind, that was a leading question. And yeah, he's my quarterback too, and you're right. But this is what I mean. In a 16-team superflex, functionally every operable backup is rostered too, in the hopes of something like this happening. Like, no one hopes for injuries. But this kind of quarterback carnage has vaulted guys like that from obscurity a couple of weeks ago to now like earning first rounders as assets. If you were going to like tell me, here's the guy that I want on my roster that could turn into an asset like that. And it doesn't have to be limited to quarterback, but I think this is a good time in the year to start thinking that way. Is there anybody that you think that is really like down there that you could flip, that you're going to roster because you think he could be suddenly worth like his weight in draft picks next year because of circumstances, because of what's going on in his team, doing whatever. It could be Minshew, it could be Allen. Any of those guys that you think you want to like roster and flip at this moment, or flip in a couple weeks when you think he's going to hit pay dirt for us?
Oh, it's so early right now. I'm sure Bob Cowper's got like six of these guys. I mean, of the quarterbacks you mentioned, of the, you know, like the Kyle Allens and those, I mean, I still think that you're looking at, you know, I do like Rudolph the most of those guys. From a position player standpoint, I think that there's just, you know, it's early and thing, you know, like I think there's like virtually no running backs available in any league. For some reason, that position is way scarcer than it's been in a while. So like I've been combing, looking for names, and I haven't, I mean, a guy that people are talking about, you know, that may have a standalone role or something going forward that, you know, could be one of those type guys is Ty Johnson on the Lions. You know, who's backing up Kerryon, and now you have no CJ Anderson. So like, you know, maybe a guy like that. Other than that, like, because we, you know, because you have these deep leagues and we have these rookie drafts with all these rounds, you know, I like that. That's tough. I mean, what, I guess one name, and I think like some people are already onto him, but you have to wallow in like watching the Dolphins or anything else. Like, I think that, you know, Jenna Davis, who, you know, who's in our podcast league, is on him and kind of sold me on him as just like a flyer guy. Is Preston Williams, as a receiver. I think that, you know, he's got a lot of the measurables if he can keep his head on straight. I mean, he's had some, you know, character flaws. But, you know, if they come in and, you know, they draft a quarterback high next year, you know, like a Tua type or whoever, and, you know, work with that. I mean, he's already producing with like subpar quarterbacks as it is. You know, I think he's a guy that you could buy fairly cheaply because nobody really wants to touch the Dolphins offense. I mean, frankly, like Kalen Ballage is probably one of those guys too, but he has just been in the highlight, like just even watching the Red Zone channel, that guy has been a disaster in highlights, just like not having his head turned and like pick six is happening, like just all sorts of stuff. Like that guy looks, you know, lost that on the football field right now, but you know, those are buy low candidates for sure.
No, it's good that you say that. I've been oddly resistant to trade offers. I've got Ballage is a guy that I had as a deep sleeper. I've had him buried in a couple of rosters, and now he just seems buried. But I think you are right. There are many pathways to him emerging. Precisely because I think a mid-season trade of Drake could unlock him a little bit, at least in terms of volume. Like that's, he would be the net beneficiary of that for sure. I mean, so that's certainly good there, and it's good to note that, right? Like for people, I guess the other side of our discussion, and we don't want to talk about the negative side, is you made an estimation of these guys' character and talent and worth to you during the offseason. It is perhaps not the most prudent move to abandon your own logic and assessment that you built up as a GM for an entire offseason based on a 3-week sample size. So I'm glad that you're speaking to the prudence of just kind of like looking to that. And you point out the flip side of this, and obviously our own Bob Cowper is great for this, and you can go to the site and read his work. But there's a lot of good information now. If you trust a 3-week sample size in the NFL, you can trust a sample size roughly the same from college football. And you can already start, as you said, don't be lazy about the math of like projecting the franchise tag. You can also start projecting in your mind players that have gotten the hype. And you can probably nail those guys like the Jonathan Taylors and the Tuas and the Justin Herberts and the Jake Fromms. And you can like start, and we know that like that wide receiver class that's coming is getting a lot of hype. You can get 10 or 12 names and think, what is this pick going to look like for me? Am I comfortable with these six or seven guys in return? Would I rather have him or would I rather have a Tyler Lockett? Like, you can start putting a name to the draft pick that you have in mind and start targeting the kind of draft pick that you would want in exchange for a good player that you'd have to give up to get it. If your team isn't doing well, Goody, are you already in that mode? Are you thinking about things like that? Or is that not how you go about quote unquote tanking when you have to face that difficult decision of a rebuild?
I mean, I certainly think about the type of players. I mean, it depends on what type of draft. I feel like my teams have been in the mix for most of the time. So, like, I don't feel like I have a ton of stockpiled assets at least in the immediate year. So, you know, I mean, someone like Matt Papson's really good about having talented players now and a stockpile of draft picks for the future. I think that ebbs and flows. I think it's important to identify the types of players you're excited about, you know, always. I think that's, you know, kind of the beauty of what this looks like, you know, what this RSL landscape is.
For sure. So that's it. Those were my list of guys that I was like, look, these are ones that are worth chasing at the moment. I like what they provide. I think they're worthwhile. Obviously we're talking deeper leagues here. As far as the bigger names, a lot of them have been producing, and you're not going to buy low, but you certainly could potentially buy high on names that you think will keep going and keep it up. I think a guy that's kind of in the middle on that and feels gettable is a longtime love of mine in the fantasy world. And with the wrist scare a few weeks ago, I was just like, I was just sick, but it just made me think, like, this is a player I want to root for. I think going and getting DJ from the DJ owner might be doable at this point because he hasn't really performed to expectation. And it's starting to feel a little bit more like a 2018 year for him than it was like his incredible year. So I think that could be gettable. And what do you think? Do you think DJ has an arrow pointing up, or are you worried about him at this point?
I think Johnson's contract and extension, just because of like injury in like last year, are fairly reasonable still. So if you believe in the upside and think that some things are happening on the touchdown side of things or anything else in that offense, Arizona offense, which has shown some ability to do some things, then, you know, I think DJ is a pretty nice buy right now.
And what about your boy Waller? One of your best calls was so funny at auction for us. Like, of course, like you like made it, like, anyway, you made a great call on Waller. Let's leave it at that. He ended up in my team. I traded him for OJ Howard. That's the kind of value you could get for him at one point and still could get for him. Obviously, that's looking bad on the Howard side of things. I'm still pretty comfortable with the process there. Talk to me about tight ends. Is Waller a guy you're willing to go pay for, even at a onesie position that generally doesn't get, like, take that much capital to go get?
The volume's there. If he's on a nice contract, like if someone used one of their cheap end-of-auction contracts like I was trying to do before Doug Baldwin automatically popped up, yes, I love that Waller deal. If he's on a one-year deal, like the franchise tag for tight ends is – we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast, is pretty nice. I mean, there's kind of a new tier of tight ends that, you know, are producing that are attractive from either a franchise tag perspective or, you know, an extension perspective. And you know, when the Hunter Henrys keep getting hurt and move out, or, you know, like guy like Kittle or you don't know what Kittle and Ertz are going to do. Kelsey is what he is. You know what that looks like. You have the ability, like the Austin Hoopers of the world come in. So especially if you're in leagues, 14 teams, 16 teams, you know, a bunch of teams, these tight ends are getting scooped up and they're giving you a significant positional advantage. So, and they can be had for pretty cheap in terms of using some of your RSO specific assets. And so I know we don't love to talk about tight ends, but I think the value above replacement for a guy like even Austin Hooper over like a guy like Vance McDonald, who's now hurt, who people are high on, you know, I mean, even like the Will Disleys of the world, I think can be had for fairly cheap in like, you know, regular 10 to 12 team leagues. And if you have them in a, you know, a 14 or 16 team league as a second tight end, you may be able to create some pretty nice value for a guy like that.
Sure, I think that's true. And you talk about that tier that's emerging. You got the guys whose standalone talent jumps off the page and jumps off the screen at you like Waller. And then you have guys like Disley, who it's largely by virtue of the quarterback to whom they are attached that makes them pop for us. If you have your choice between an uber talent of their own right or the caddy to a great offense, which door are you going for? Like, which door are you opting into?
I think I'm going wherever I feel like the volume is most predictable.
So fair enough. Yeah.
In this case, I would think it would be, you know, a guy like Waller over a Disley, you know, probably also over a guy like, Austin Hooper as well.
Yeah, fair enough. But what about like a guy like OJ Howard at this point, who's a talent by all means, like, and draft capital the whole bit. So presumably he's the more talented guy attached to the better offense. If you listen to some people, though Jameis Winston might all give us pause. Like, is it Howard or Waller in your mind at this point?
At this point, I think I'd rather have Waller. I mean, until Howard plays a full season where he's producing, I don't think you have a sample size that's, you know, you've seen flashes, but, you know, there's a lot of weapons there and there's less weapons in Oakland.
The hurt guys on good contracts. Are you going to make offers if you're a forward-looking owner for guys like Hunter Henry, Njoku, those guys?
I haven't seen anything there that makes me want to jump on those guys right now.
All right, fair enough. Look at that. Some tight end talk. A little bit of tight end love for people. So we are facing the end here. Buddy, tell me about where people can go looking for you.
All right. All About Reality podcast can be found on many platforms, including Anchor, iTunes, and all the majors. You can find me personally at Twitter at MattGoody2.
Very good. We really appreciate the user engagement. Please pick it up. If you've been listening for a while, we value your opinion. Go let us know on ratings and reviews. Tell us how we're doing and what you want from us. And again, reach out. We're a lot more active. Even we're pretty active in the offseason, but we're even more active during the season. This is a good outlet, and we will answer your questions, and we'll come to you for advice. We'll come to you for giving advice, and we'll let you know the reality sports online GMs are a great contingency. We really appreciate you. All About Reality is going to stay here for you. It's good to be back with you, partner, and we'll see you soon on the flip side. This is Luke Patrick at fantasy.gok signing out.